lines.
There are three startup companies, the last speaker, there are three startup companies in the U.S. right now working on distribution voltage control with low voltage power electronics. Two of them are pursuing a UPFC type architecture with both a series and shunt compensation. And there's also another initiative in California called the Smart Inverter Initiative, which is building on German experience, right? I'm told that the shunt compensation, just the VARs, doesn't work so well. You know, fundamental issue on high penetration PV in Germany, et cetera, is you know, cloud passing and then pumping up and down the distribution voltage, right? So can you comment on that, or have you thought through these type of controls?
Just really not much more than what I said. I've just got colleagues around me who are trying, they see the issues, and they're kind of taking a fresh approach. They tried some of the existing, like, scaled down statcoms and things, and that didn't work very well. So now they're, and I know that, I think I've heard of the project you mentioned in California. They're just starting all over again, in a sense, to design new controllers for low voltages. And my point was that we need to follow that and model them and include them in our coordination techniques. Hopefully, those controllers will be decentralized. You can't coordinate, you know, millions of things like that, or even thousands perhaps, but you can include them in your models of the higher voltage.
One of the claims made is with the series compensation is that you isolate a sensitive load, if you will, from the distribution medium voltage directly, that could be quite effective in controlling actually delivered voltage to a given customer. So if you take your, where you have problematic customers on the distribution feeder, if you can isolate a few of those, you can live with a wider swing of the heating voltage and keep everybody on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all sounds sensible, and I'm not dealing with that on a day-to-day basis, but I think there's a genuine control problem there that we can deal with a lot of the techniques, that not actually apply the techniques, but use the ideas that we've got to address these problems.
Yes, my name is Stefano Sofronio. I come from the Greek power transmission system operator. I would like to make a comment to the first paper of Professor Kezunovic. At first, I would like to say that I have enjoyed the paper. I give the credits to this paper. And I would like to say that I would like to emphasize some things. I think that the aspect which presented Professor Kezunovic is perhaps one of the most challenging issues of the protection and operation today in our networks. I mean that we must all know that now we have the tools and we have also the background to make our networks better. We can operate the availability of protection and operation data and make I must emphasize that there is a value added, a business value, as Professor Kezunovic said, in this application. Under this theory, I would like to say that we are talking about applications of SCADA type systems, where we can exploit the all available data from protection, from operation, from automations. As you know now, in protection, we nominate the relays now IEDs, intelligence electronic devices. And in order not to disturb you, I would like to say at least three applications. At first, with these systems, which when we can in an automated way analyze all the events and characterize and assess them. In this case, we can have at least three applications. First, we can, for example, localize the faults in accuracy and act faster. Second, we can have adaptive protection. That means that we can tackle, we can fight the problem with the fast changes of the topologies, we can, let's say, follow up the network, which changes every time. As you know, settings are, let's say, confirmed, stable, but we can exploit also the possibility that have the relays for having different group of settings, and they get, they can change over in case the topology demands this event. Then the third application is that we can analyze the events and make decision better. And on top of them, I would say that the reason is to help the operations. For example, as you know, the practical of the protection is when a fault occurs, then there is an automatic reclosing. And then when the faults persist, then we have definite trip. After that time, the operator is obliged to restore the line. There are many papers, and I think that the situation is now very mature, where we can, considering the comtrade files, the transient files, and all the oscillatories that we take from the relays, we can understand what type of fault is, whether it is a weather fault, whether it is a lightning, whether it is a contact with the machine, etc. And so we can act better afterwards as operator. So I would like to say that we must trigger the utilities. There are many utilities also in Europe that have such system. Perhaps Professor Kezunovic, if he would like, he would say if there are such applications in America. And I think that now, as we have behind us the electricity period and all this, now we must pay attention in the quality. So we have the tools, and we must rely on them. Okay, thank you.
I don't have much to add to the examples that were given. They are good examples. You know, people could look at them. They are published in different places. However, I do want to make one point, maybe re-emphasize that I stated at the beginning. The data is available now more than ever, and it's not going to go away. It's just going to be bigger problem, or bigger use of it, or whatever you want to call it. But the problem is going to grow, exponentially grow. So the question is, what is the business value of that? It cannot be ignored, because the way it's collected costs money. And so if you are trying to collect more of it, or if it's available because you installed the equipment, you have to calculate the return on the investment. So that's a challenge that I didn't find addressed by the industry, even the suppliers, large suppliers, or anybody like that, let alone the utility industry. So I think that's an issue where we should focus on as a community.
Can I make a point on that issue? Can you hear me from here? Yeah. I'd like to first of all say I think everything in your presentation was perfectly sensible and looked like good old-fashioned principles of collecting, having the right data and the right data in the right place at the right time. And you can argue that terms like big data and smart grids are necessary for getting grants and so on. But there is a danger here too, and I'd like to use a personal experience. There was a major project in Australia, $100 million for smart grids. And the people involved were telecommunication engineers, because they were the new guys in the utility, and IBM and Ericsson. And I remember sitting through meeting after meeting with these IBM and Ericsson guys, and they knew nothing about power systems, absolutely nothing. But they had all this LTE, this is physical layer telecommunications, LTE, and they had all their big computers. So their view of a smart grid was just collect heaps of data, more the better, send it over large telecommunication networks and store it somewhere. And they were openly saying, we don't know what people are going to do with this. And there were a few academics on the periphery saying, well, hang on, how are we going to use this? So I think there's a danger in just embracing a paradigm that involves just collecting lots of data. And I think in the power community, we have a long worked out tradition of having the right data. That can mean more data and more computers, but the right data in the right place at the right time, sensibly accessible, but not just great silos of data. And I know that's not what you're suggesting, but this is what happened in the end when you put it in the wrong hands. You get these great silos of data and no one knows how to get them to talk to each other just by the sheer volume of it all. So I just want to add that, you know, this has to be embraced sensibly and not just as big data is going to be good for the sake of it being good.
Yes, may I say a second thought? Yes, a second thought is that with all this application, there is an issue about the investments, because the utilities must be persuaded about the value added, and I have the opinion that there must be in a stepwise investment, that means a pilot program for the major substation, let's say, and then to see the results, etc., and then to proceed with the whole system. And we must not wait for any blackout, because many times the utilities are forced by a major event to make some innovations. In this time, perhaps we some give some place to predict such situation. Okay, thank you.
João Peças Lopes, Inest Porto, Portugal. This is a question to, a comment and a question to Mladen. So, of course, I fully agree with what was presented. I just would like to highlight one point that now we are not only dealing with big data, so those large volumes of data, but continuous volume of records that are coming. And this requires new solutions, new techniques like data stream analysis, because we in the power system community, we are already used to, for instance, to machine learning, to knowledge extraction techniques. But now we have to face another challenge, because the challenge is that this is a continuous set of data that is coming, and so we need new techniques for that. Are you envisaging some specific data stream analysis technique to do with that?
Yeah, we are working on these techniques. The slide that I had with these slices of processing is the key slide. That's the data analytics that is required to handle the data. And that's what these big companies are really not familiar with, because it's data analytics is related to the power systems. That's how you process data to correlate what's happening in the system. That's why they are talking about moving data, storing data at these scales. The implication of the discussion I had was not to move and store necessarily, it's to process at the source quite often and extract features and deal with the features. But there is the data contains a lot of information and knowledge depending how you apply the data analytics. So the key to this big data problem, the key is the data analytics. And we had there was an article in the Power and Energy a few issues back that we did on this issue of data analytics, and so that can be read. By the way, I don't want to preempt the discussion, because there were other good papers,
Can I make a final comment now to the last paper from David Hill? So just to say that presently in Europe, for instance, we are already developing solutions based on this distributed control, voltage control solutions, like, for instance, as you mentioned, Germany, for instance, to tackle with large integration of PV, the grid code that is presently being put on in operation is such that the DSO is capable to send set points to the inverters of the PV panels. And they are prepared to deal with that. I also believe that this is not enough. So it is necessary to have specific power electronic solutions to make the interface with the grid, such that you can limit the amount of power that is injected into the grid according to the voltage level at the connection point. And we have developed such solutions, but I agree that this has to be matched with centralized control that is local, although in some way centralized. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Claudio Canizares, University of Waterloo, Canada. I have a comment for paper number 3, a brief comment that I think is, and then a comment regarding continuing the discussion that David brought up about medium voltage, low voltage, voltage regulation, which is an interesting issue. Regarding paper number 3, equations 20 in your paper and slide 15, basically those are complementary constraint representations of the Q limits. Mm-hmm. It was work done by Rosshart, I think, almost 10 years ago, which you may want to take a look at. That word that was used in about 6-7 years ago with a student of mine, in which we presented a paper in Circuits and Systems discussing the feasibility of a power flow solution represented as an optimization problem. So somewhat related to the work you did, not quite. Actually, we had tried to look at the problem from the semi-definite programming. We couldn't solve it, so I'm very glad to see that you were able to address that very, very smartly, very intelligent. So good work. Regarding the issue you raised, David, regarding low voltage, medium voltage regulation, and try to coordinate all of that, I'm a bit leery and worried of that, because what is happening, for example, of voltage, low voltage levels, is that customers, I'm involved in a project with an industrial customer right now, in which they are implementing voltage regulation at that level, right? Talking about low voltage, 400, 600 level voltage, in which basically they have their own objectives. So what they're trying to do is reduce the voltage, reduce consumption, and reduce peak load. So it's totally, which is advantageous from the point of view of what we're trying to do at the power system, which is that basically reduce load. So that's good. Then at the medium voltage, what is happening is with all these PVs, wind turbines, the code is changing. So now these are being forced to regulate voltage because the voltage are peaking and regulating. So that's another advantage for us because that's fixing the voltage at that level, which is not necessarily going to be good for us because now the load is going to start behaving like constant power, right? Yep. Which we don't want.
Yep.
We want that load to reduce with voltage. So we need to be aware of these issues, but try to coordinate all of these. And I think you mentioned that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's going to be impossible.
You've given a better explanation than I did.
As you mentioned, you need to be aware of these issues and represent that at the higher level.
Yep.
But try to coordinate all of that. I don't see that happening, really.
Well, I agree. And you know, we have to solve. In a sense, we can't keep talking. I think there was a point on Sunday. I just think this is... We need some science in this. This is a time when... We can't just keep talking about renewable penetrations of 50% and 60% and 70% and so on without kind of scientifically proving that it's going to work. And voltage stability is just one of the issues. And I think you've given a very good explanation of how I see it. There's a fundamental, it's not clear how to settle it with high penetrations of renewables at low, and that the high penetration being at low voltages and high voltages, if we're going to have the sort of voltage security or that we're used to. It's not absolutely clear to me that we'll achieve that. So we need to work on it and hopefully show that it's possible for very high levels of renewables. So I think we're agreeing here that there's a... It's just, we always had this issue. Low voltage regulators always looked after their own voltage, and that's why when we were first looking at coordinated voltage control, we considered strategies like tap blocking and load shedding and so on, which, you know, to get rid of those low voltage activities which were working against the preservation of the system voltage, the high voltage.
Okay, there was also a comment to Daniel. Daniel,
I'd say thank you for your comment. I'll talk to you afterwards and maybe talk to you this one.
Okay. So, please.
My name is Manuel Salasinelis from the local electric utility. I have a short comment to the last speaker. In the testing scenarios you show us IEEE system, I see that there is a line tripping at 30 seconds and then at 180 seconds, meaning 150 seconds later. We have the line reconnection. Oh, this is second, not millisecond. Yes, yeah, so it's not the recloser that it operated. It's just manually that the line came into the system.
To be honest, I forget. Maybe we can look at this offline, if that's okay. I'm not clear. I'm not fully understanding what you're saying, but probably I forget the details. So.
Okay. The reclosing. So the time is the scale is a second, not millisecond, because I thought just that it was millisecond and the recloser time. It was for me not familiar, but it's manually reclosing. I suppose because it's at 150 seconds later.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay. Maybe yeah. We'll speak about it later. Yeah.
Okay. Let me check that.
Okay.
Thank you. This is a question. Oh, Alex Papalexopoulos, Echo International. This is a question for the first paper about big data. In our mind, big data is equal big money. So this the question for you is more a business question as opposed to a technical question or more regulatory question. There is an intense debate in Europe and in the US actually, who is controlling this data? For example, in Europe, are the DSOs or third-party providers? The outcome of that debate will determine in many respects the future of the utility business model. That's why there's so much, it's a critical issue, it's so much right on this, on the answer to this question. Can you, from your perspective, how do you see these things going in terms, who is gonna control this data? Are the utilities? For example, in Europe, the DSOs, or third-party providers?
There are two issues with this. One issue is that some of the data that we are referring to is readily available to anybody who wants to use it, the weather data, the animal migration data, and things like that. So that's accessible to anybody. The data that comes from the system, from the measurements in the system, may have to be actually driven in terms of the usage and future business models by the value of that data. If I have a value as an ISO from the data that is coming from the operating company's substation, and I have a business case for that, I should negotiate with the company how this return is shared. It's like everything else, you know, you get something from somebody and you make money out of that, you go back to that person and you say, well, you know, let's see how we can share that income. So I think the first step in this is to actually put the business value on data. And that is not done. If you look at the synchrophasor data, for example, this is just one example. Synchrophasor data is obtained today in different ways in terms of the ownership. In some instances, the companies that are operating companies that have synchrophasor instruments in their substations are the owners of the data. In some other instances in the United States, we have where the ISO has invested and put the equipment in the substation. So they are the owners of that equipment. The company has agreed to let them do that. So now you have these two different business models. In the first case, the owner is the one that has the equipment and maintains and everything else and can sell it, if you will, to somebody else. While in the other case, the ISO owns the whole thing and can sell it back to the company for operating reasons. Now, there is no relationship that is established right now how to trade data. There's a relationship how to trade energy, but there is no relationship how to trade data. So I think that's where we need to head. We need to put the money on the data and establish the way how we trade data.
Quickly, privacy. I'm referring more to third-party providers, not ISO versus utilities. To me, they are both utilities. I'm referring to utilities versus Oracle, SAP, those type of companies.
Hey, this is all the same. In my mind, all the same. Trading data may be between the cloud computing entity that is going to provide a service based on this data, because I can provide a service for outage management, not being part of the utility company. I can actually do it today myself. I can do it today because I have software to do it. So, however, I have to trade the data with the company to provide these kinds of services. So it doesn't really matter who eventually processes the data and provides the service, as long as there is a mechanism to trade data. And that is what is missing. It is absolutely missing. And I think we need to start the discussion along those lines. I believe strongly in that, so that we can get the actual value out of the data, rather than storing the data, as was mentioned, and moving the data and not knowing what to do with it, and hoping that sometimes in the future we're going to use it. And quite often we realize that we don't even know how to use it. When we get in the future to it, we see that certain things are missing, so it's useless. As a matter of fact, most of this data that is stored, that is a synchrophasor data in many places, is actually useless in many instances, because nobody has looked into how to use it. Anyway, that's...
Ian Hiskins, University of Michigan. So it was actually a follow-up to the voltage control discussion earlier. One of the big differences that we need to keep in mind when we're thinking about voltage control at low voltage and medium voltage is that it's high resistive networks now. And that really alters the way that we've all grown up with this idea that it's we can forget resistance, and that that's no longer the case. That alters the way that voltages are affected by power flows, active power flows. And then add to that the fact that we've also grown up with this idea of generation, where the output from the generator is constant, therefore we hold the voltage at the terminals constant and everything looks wonderful. Now when we hold the voltage at the terminals of the renewable sources constant and we're pumping out variable active power, you're pushing the voltage variations out into the network. And if you're not coordinating with something else out in the network, you're going to see bad things happen. It's a very interesting and different problem to what we've grown up with.
Is that a general comment you're addressing to someone?
General comment.
Okay. So,
Pete? Pete Sauer from the University of Illinois. And first to Daniel, congratulations. It's always fun to hear things like that, proving that there is no solution to something. I have to ask you, though, first of all, the power flow equations are not necessarily the equilibrium condition based on constant inputs to the control systems. They're different. They're sort of what you would like to have as an equilibrium, not necessarily what you would have. But I'm curious if your method points to any type of remedy. Do you have any residuals that you compute that would tell you to change this parameter and then the solution would exist, which would be very valuable for perhaps some kind of control?
Sure, so the first, we discussed two methods. The first one with this semi-definite programming stuff.
On the microphone, please.
Oh, sorry, is this better?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so we discussed two methods. The first one with the semi-definite programming stuff, I think does give some insight in that area, because it gives you, the solution, it actually gives you the solution at the nodes point, and it gives you sensitivities related to that solution because we're solving an optimization problem. So I think there's something to that. Now the second one, using the sum of squares thing, at least so far we haven't been able to determine if there's any information or what information is available in the solution, what the solution actually tells you beyond saying that there isn't a solution or there could be a solution. So that's something else we're interested in looking into further, but I think the first one, I think there's something there.
Okay, Sandro Corsi from Italy. I refer to the second paper, because the question. So, Ramos, I follow your proposal to group preventive control by an offline heavy computing based on a given system model, but as you know, the system changes the model time by time, hour by hour, according to the situation, after a contingency, and so on. It seems unbelievable that you can computing all this situation before. Actually, probably you need something also online in real time and so on. So that appear very, very complex, very heavy for a reliable practical application. Do you have any comment on this aspect?
Well, first of all, thank you for the question. Well, our idea is to we're moving towards a real-time application of these particular methods. One of the reasons we've chosen to apply the look-ahead method is that it's actually already being used by PGM and California ISO to compute voltage stability margins. So this is done in real time. And the remaining actions, I agree with you. On the issue of determining the global controls or the set of best preventive controls to avoid voltage instability, we can do it in a very fast manner. The second step, that is to determine the amount of control that is going to be used, this has a heavy computational burden, so we still have a long way to go on that. But determining the group for eliminating the criticality of all of the whole set of critical contingencies is something that we can do on a real-time basis with the proposed approach that we have now.
Okay, so last but not least, Professor Vurnas.
Kostas Vurnas. I have two questions for the two voltage stability papers. The questions are very short. I hope I can have also short answers because we are jumping into the coffee break time. Question to Rodrigo Ramos. I have a feeling that your method is a little bit of an overkill, because if in your paper, your application, all you do is switch capacitors, then these capacitors will be switched only, they will be always switched on unless they create an overvoltage. So first you have to check if they create an overvoltage. If they don't, then you switch them on anyway. There's no cost to it. Your method should be applied to something that has cost to take into account, so then you optimize. Otherwise, there's no point in optimizing which capacitors to switch. Question to Daniel Molzan. You showed something that was very strange for me, and maybe you can explain now, or you can convince me during the coffee break. You said you can have your margin being less than one and still have a solution for n equal one, because you said it is not necessary condition. I think sufficient and necessary is that the margin is less than the present point. But okay, I'll let reply. Thank you.
So, quick. Could you please have a short reply?
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Costas, for the question and for letting me explain this issue. We only used capacitor banks for this particular application because we wanted to show that the method works regardless of the type of the control that you're adding. This can be extended and will be extended to other types of control in the near future. That's a future trend or a future direction of this research. So this will be addressed in the near future.
I think I have a quick answer, sure. So the semi-definite program formulation that we're using in that first condition it is itself a relaxation. So that's where we can make sufficient guarantees but not necessary guarantees because it's a
So it's not the actual rule of flow equation.
Right, it's a non-conservative problem.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's thank the attention all the authors for